This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Thank you very much that you said that you'd come and share your story and be a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
Really important, I think, that I do.
Take us back to when you started to have symptoms that led up to your diagnosis.
So I've always had migraines. I've had migraines since I was 13. I've always been on medication for migraines. It was never taken any further. As I got older, the migraines got more intense, but I continued to take the medication on the GP's advice. I'd had absent seizures since I was about 19. At the time, I didn't know they were absent seizures. It's only since being diagnosed that I know that's what they were. My first major one that I can remember was I was at university and my friend said to me, "Are you even listening to me?" And I was just completely blank. And I went back to the GP and I said, "This is getting a bit more frequent now. It's happening a lot more." But again, they said it was anxiety. They said it was a type of panic attack that I could have. And that's where it started to really be a bit more real. The migraine, the week that I got diagnosed, supposed migraine, the headache was so intense. It just got worse and worse as the week went on. And it started on the Sunday. And then by the Tuesday, I had to leave school because I'm a school teacher. So I had to leave work. And I just said, "This headache is like something I've never had before." I said, "It's like the headache from hell." And I came home. And apart from going to the GP twice and A&E three times, I didn't get out of bed for a week. And by the Sunday, my husband came home with my son from his swimming lesson in the morning. And I was having a seizure in bed where I was unconscious. And that eventually when somebody listened to me at hospital and gave me a scan that I needed, really.
Yeah.
I went back and forth to the GP and A&E a combined amount of five times that week that I had the seizure. And I even at one point went to the neurology department at the hospital. A&E sent me to the neurology department at the hospital. And they told me that my work was stressful and I needed to go on a spa day and have a facial routine before I go to bed at night. I wasn't even given a scan on the day the seizure happened. So I was transferred to the neurosurgery ward, which I have to mention were fantastic. But until the consultant came on the next day, I wasn't given a scan that night following from A&E. So if it wasn't for my family, because I was so out of it and what's going on, that if it wasn't for my family pushing for me to have that scan, I don't know when I would have had it, to be honest, and when I would have been told that's what it was.
When you went and had the MRI, when were you given some sort of feedback on things?
So this was probably a week after the initial headache from hell, as I call it, started. And they told me on the ward that I was on, they started me on some epilepsy medication, so they kept me in to see if that had balanced out the chemicals in my brain to stop me having the seizures. And they come to my dad's side and I said, "If anything's really wrong, can you wait for my family to be here?" So they came back later and yet again, I was on my own. And my consultant, my neurosurgery consultant, is absolutely appalled that I was told in the way I was told on my own, "You've got a brain tumour." And then those words, I think, will just stick with me forever. Because from that, my life has changed dramatically.
They really
and
should
again,
make sure someone's with you. They really
and
should
again,
make sure someone's with you.
Yeah, I think it goes back to other cancers again. Yeah, unfortunately, I have had family that have battled other cancers and people always have someone with them. And when I tell them, "This is my story," people are just completely shocked
by
there isn't something in place like there is for these other cancers. And that's not disputing that they aren't important too, but we are important. Yeah. Our community is important. The words that were given to me in that conversation were, we think it's benign, we think. And looking back on that now that I'm in a position to understand what was actually going on, the tumour was taking up half of the right side of my brain. It was huge. And I was so optimistic in, okay, I've got a tumour, but it's not cancerous. I can get through this. I've always been quite a positive person to think I'll get through anything that's thrown at me. Mm. But that led me to quite a few months after really being diagnosed and having the operations of being optimistic and probably quite naive into what I was about to face.
Yeah. How long did you wait until you'd had that conversation and the diagnosis to then where they put you to start doing treatment?
So the operation happened a week later. Mm. I couldn't have they wanted to operate sooner, but I couldn't have the operation because of the high dose of aspirin they'd give me to thin my blood in A&E. Ah. So what they treated my migraines with in A&E delayed my operation. Otherwise, the neurosurgeon wanted to operate sooner than what she did.
And on that day when you were going to have the operation, how did that plan out? What was that like for you? Because did you stay the day before at the hospital overnight and then they have you in the morning to have the surgery?
I never left the hospital from the moment I went to A&E with the seizure. I didn't leave hospital. So they kept me in due to the size of, and obviously to monitor the seizures and to make sure that the dose of the anti-seizure medication I was on was correct. I never left the hospital, but it was surreal.
Yeah.
I never forget. Yeah. I made a video for my son on my phone. Mm. I made a video to say, if mummy doesn't wake up, you need to know that she'll always love you and she'll always be proud of you. And I think at that point it really hit me that this is serious. And I think he was so young at the time, he still is now, and I know it sounds cliche, but to have to do that at my age, 26, 25 at the time I was, it just didn't feel fair or right.
Yeah.
I think especially I'm still going through chemotherapy treatment at the moment. So my son, he's seen me at home be a little bit more poorly than he did in hospital, and we always pick the good days for him to come and see me in hospital. So the school that he's at the moment have been fantastic, and they've worked with him. And there's a book called Nurse Ted, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It explains brain tumours to children in the most wonderful way. It's a story about a dad and his daughter. I was lucky enough that my CNS at the hospital, she was fantastic, and she sent me two copies. So there was one for school and one for myself here as well.
Oh, wow.
And any difficult questions that he had, I think it's helped him feel like, at one point he asked me, Mom, are you going to die? Mm. I don't want you to die. And I think they are all things that's going through the children's head that sometimes they don't express because they're worried about upsetting you.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had enough information about everything?
In all honesty, the cancer nurse specialist, the two ladies at the hospital, they are fantastic and they still support me to this day. They are absolutely wonderful and they talked me through everything. My neurosurgeon taught me through everything. But what I feel like is really important to bring up in this conversation is that throughout this, I've met somebody through one of the support forums on social media, and she's a little bit behind in her journey than me, so she's only just had her operation. And she's from a completely different area in the country, but her support has been so awful compared to what I've received.
Mm.
And I feel absolutely gutted that I've had this support and I've made friends out of them. And I know, I don't know if they'd be happy with me saying that, because I know they're trying to be professional people, but I feel so confident that I can ring them at any point in the week and say, oh, I'm worried about this, but she's got nothing like, so why? And this again goes back to the strategy that the Brain Tumour Charity are calling for. Why have I been given support that somebody else who's going through exactly the same thing, exactly the same tumour with the same grade, and she's not getting the same support as me?
Yeah.
As well, I was in hospital for such a long time. So within I was in hospital for over the course of 3 months. I had my first operation in June, and then in July I went back home for about 4 days, and then ended up back in hospital with an infection in the bone of my skull where the operation had happened. So I had to have part of my skull taken out. So I had another operation, and then they put a Hickman line in place for me to do the Hickman line. And I caught sepsis from the Hickman line that was put in place. So those 3 months, not only did they feel so surreal, but I think I was so focused on getting better in those 3 months that I didn't have time to think about the tumour.
Yeah.
I was just getting over whatever was put in front of me at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Everything goes in such a rush that and then it becomes a bit of a blur afterwards, and you're trying to put together like what's just happened. And
I think that's when it hit me the most as well with my mental health.
Mm.
I think when I come home, and again, probably the same as my son, when I come home and I actually had time to think about what had just happened to me over the last 4 months, it was like, oh, this is my life now. and that's when the psychologist come in really useful for me, the neuropsychologist. Mm. And again, I've been offered immense support from my neuropsychologist, but my friend in another part of the country hasn't been. And why?
What tumour does she have?
Exactly the same as me.
That's such a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame, isn't it? That's clearly something that needs to be addressed. Thank goodness you can give her some advice that she's not getting over there. So you'll feed out from what your support counsellors and stuff you're having. You can almost give her some of the stuff you're hearing.
Yeah, and that's what I have done.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel a bit purposeful at the moment. Because as I said to you, I was a teacher before, so I had such a busy life. So helping others has been part of my purpose and a bit of a mission at the moment.
Yeah. So after you'd had the surgery, what was it like for you?
So again, the support that I received and the consultant at the hospital that I'm at were fantastic. So I can't fault them one bit. The seizures stopped, luckily. I haven't had any seizures after having the operation. But yeah, I think it's just so surreal. And obviously, if you've been through it yourself, but I think you can't really explain to anybody how you feel, because you just have to get on with it. There's no other option.
Yeah, I think you need something to keep going as well. You've got your children, your family. That keeps you thinking, focusing forward, having something to why you need to get out of this bed.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you have any treatment, rehabilitation afterwards?
So because of the sepsis that I had in the Hickman line, my radiotherapy was delayed slightly. They did want to start it earlier in the September of 2023, but they didn't start it until the end of October 2023. So I've just recently finished, just before Christmas, I finished my 6 weeks of intense radiotherapy.
Mm.
And now I've got 12 months of chemotherapy.
Yeah, tiredness seems to be the thing that most people say about radiation. But did you have anything?
Yeah, the fatigue with the radio, that was tough. And I did come back from the radio every day. And like I say, it was very intense every day for 6 weeks. I came back and I slept and just had to get over it. But some of the rounds of chemotherapy that I've had, so I've had 3 rounds so far. Some of them have been better than others. It's tough, and I think it is the fatigue. Yeah, the fatigue is the worst part of it.
Where you've had to try and process everything, where did you go for the support? Were you still getting it from the nurses, or did you find a specific group that's been able to give you some understanding of everything, or just some comfort?
So the Brain Tumour Support Charity have been a massive support to me, and they do face-to-face groups in my area, and they have been a brilliant support to me. But
is that Brain Tumour Support, or is that the Brain Tumour Charity?
That's Brain Tumour Support, but then also the Brain Tumour Charity, reading on their forums, etc., about other people that are going through similar situations. And I think that's the biggest thing for me. That's what helped me the most, is to speak to people that are going through the same thing. And that's what I wanted the whole time I was in hospital.
Yeah.
Is somebody going through the same thing as me that I could talk to, and somebody that understood, because it was really difficult to explain how I felt to my family and friends because they hadn't been through it. So I felt like I was misunderstood, and my personality changed sometimes. So when I first came out of hospital, I got quite snappy and quite angry about things really quickly, but that was a side effect of the medication that I'm on and the brain tumour itself. The anti-epileptic medication that can cause personality changes, and alongside other things that I was on when I came out of hospital, the steroids, etc., it seemed to, even if they were helping, they were hindering different parts of my personality. I'm lucky, like I say, that I've got a supportive family and friends, but I often say to my husband, or my son even understands now, and I'll say, "Mum just needs 5 minutes." And I'll go and I'll sit in a room and I won't even go on my phone. I won't watch the television. I will just have 5 minutes, right, and pull myself back together. But it still happens now. And I think it's a big life adjustment when you've never been that person. Mm. Obviously, being a teacher and a mum, I'm quite a patient person normally, and I was always the one that people had come to for advice, and I've lost that role in my life. And I think I'm thinking about what I was going to say to you before I came to speak to you, and I think that's one of the toughest things that I've faced, because even though I've been so positive in the last 9 months, there's been some really lonely and dark times where after all I've thought about all day, every day, is tumour and how it's going to control the rest of my life.
What things have you felt has given you a boost of energy and something positive?
So we've got a dog. So walking the dog when I felt able to.
Yeah,
and I think it's important to highlight.
Yeah.
Don't feel able to do that every day. But definitely getting some fresh air and getting out. And I think taking the small little achievements that you make. So when I first came out of hospital, I remember one of the nurses saying to me, when you get home, every little win, you need to make it big. So even I'd wipe the table down after we'd had dinner, or I'd helped to do the dishes, that they were big things for me. So I think it's important for anybody who's new to a brain tumour diagnosis, that those little things that you do make them a big yay.
Yeah. Oh. You were at the Royal Stoke Hospital. Do you look at your surgeon and think you're amazing? Like we all think our surgeons are amazing.
My surgeon, I was told, is one of the best in the country.
I think they all are though. I think all of them are, because if you think they've all done the same exam, they've all done the same, all those years of practice. So they say brain surgeons are like the smartest people.
Yeah. And I think she was so understanding as well. I think anything, again, as a teacher, I always used to say, no question, silly question. If it's on your mind, someone else will be thinking it too. But she's so approachable and absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
I couldn't ask for anybody better, really, an understanding of what I'm going through.
I think you're the first person to say you had a female surgeon. First person.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that is.
She, like I say, I cannot. She has stuck up for me. She's fought for things. One of the times that I was admitted to hospital, it was my birthday, and it was when I had sepsis. And she says, it's a birthday. And she's got sepsis. Put her in a side room and let her have all the family in.
Oh.
And that's what I needed. My family around me, that I needed to have that support. And I think she really understood that. And on an empathetic and sympathetic level, she was above and beyond.
Yeah. What would you say is the toughest challenge that you've gone through so far?
I think the loss of independence. For me, I've lost my driving license, so I can't have that back until 2 years after my radiotherapy.
Yeah.
It made me feel quite isolated. I was always such an independent person, so I'm relying on other people to take me to places, to take me to appointments. And I suppose just being the carefree person that I was before, nothing bothered me. I was the mum that would be at the top of the high climb, rising, jumping off with the children. I was the fun friend. I was the fun mum. Even though parts of that are still there with me and I can feel them slowly coming back, I feel like I've been snatched off too early. And that's all I said when I got diagnosed. I kept saying to my husband, this is not fair. I'd be ready for something like this if I was 90. When in actual fact, I probably wouldn't be. I don't think anybody's ever ready for it. But yeah, I think the loss of independence is what has hit me the hardest, and the isolation.
Isn't it strange? So I felt the same with losing my identity. I can't drive anymore now at all because my vision, because it's not my eyes that have a problem, it's just the brain signals have gone. So I can't see out of one eye and half of the other eye. It meant I can't drive anymore. And it's so strange that when anyone says, what's the worst part of all this? And I said that I lost my driving license. Isn't it weird that that it's just such a big part of our lives is to have the independence?
And again, I think going off from that, my house was so quiet last summer. I normally have my friends' boys round because obviously I'm off in the summer holidays and I look after them in the summer, and just being able to get out and doing day trips with the children, because my son's an only one. So he's always asking for friends round, and just being able to do things like that's normal life, and it's been snatched away from us, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does feel like that.
And I think also the unknown.
Yeah.
Because I'm such a control freak.
We're a teacher. It's all about planning.
Unknown days.
Yeah. Tell us a bit more about the charity's fundraising.
Brain Tumour Support, they hold events that are close to me. There's a nice little community of us here that we've done some fundraising. We raised over £1,000. Just bucket collecting outside a football match. And that gave me a little bit of purpose. And I've got some big plans for what I can do to raise money for these charities, because without them, I wouldn't have got through that. And that's not being cliche or just taking it for granted, because I don't. Because I remember seeing a video once saying the charities used to be the icing on the cake, but now they are the cake. And it's true. It's so true that without them, I don't know where I'd be now. Yeah. I think I'd still be in quite a dark place.
Yeah. How did you find about those charities? Were you told from the hospital, or you had to do your own research?
So the hospital gave me the Brain Tumour Charities information leaflets, which were so useful. There was things in there that my partner could read and my family could read as well, so that they could understand what I was going through. And then the Brain Tumour Support Charity, the hospital, the cancer specialist nurses from the hospital actually attend the face-to-face groups. So there's an extra medical professional there to support. They promoted that one to me.
Yeah. I'm actually amazed that so the Royal Stoke Hospital is what you said. And I'm amazed by the things that they've done. Like, it actually sounds so positive. Because if you hear, like you say, about the other person, that they've just not got any support. And yet yours seems to be, it seems to be ticking off all the boxes that have been missing in the past. They seem to be doing, they're on the right path, whereas others need to maybe follow suit.
Yeah, I think in terms of care and aftercare, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But in terms of people that aren't neurosurgeons or cancer nurse specialists, I think they just need that awareness of, and I think it goes countrywide, but maybe worldwide too, but it goes countrywide that there needs to be an awareness for people that aren't in that field of, something needs to click in a box where they go, you've got three of the symptoms of a brain tumour, here's an MRI scan.
When they say it takes 5 appointments before someone looks into it a bit further, and if you don't go back at least 4 times to try and get the doctor to look a bit deeper into your situation, then you just end up under the radar.
Would my family have had to fight for me to have a scan? That shouldn't be the case. We pay into a national healthcare system, so it shouldn't be the case. What should be the case is that you are given the right care at the right time when you need it, and people should be aware of what a possibility this could be. I've done some awareness work with the Brain Tumour Charity. We have photographs of the people to raise awareness, really, and I suppose, and make a stand that it is a no-brainer. If you haven't signed their open letter, please sign it, because it is so important. That it is a no-brainer for the government to put a national brain tumour strategy in place. And so far, I believe, they've got more than half of the signatures they need. They only need 40,000 signatures for this open letter to be taken to the government. And yeah, I think it's really important that people do sign it. There does need to be a national strategy for brain tumours, because it's such an important thing, that a cancer that kills more people than any other cancer under the age of 40, and it is given 1% of the national budget, is crazy.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah, it's mind-blowing that we to only have 1%. And even though that is a huge amount what they get, but it's nowhere near as to what others charities get. And it just doesn't touch the corners, does it? There's so much that needs...
Not at all.
Yes.
I've sat in the doctors many a times with my husband and I've said, just look at all these posters. There's posters for breast cancer, there's posters for bowel cancer. There's all the awareness around symptoms and when you should seek advice for these other cancers, but there was none for brain tumours. And maybe if I'd have seen a poster, my story might have started a little bit differently. If I'd have thought, oh, I've got all of those symptoms, then it would have been a lot different, and I think I would have been diagnosed a lot earlier as well. Because I didn't know nothing about brain tumours, but now it's my life. And I'm living with it.
Is there anyone you want to say thank you to for everything you've been through and what you're going through?
I think firstly my family. My boy George, you might listen to this in about 10 years' time when I show it to him.
Hi, George.
And I hope I've made them proud with everything I've done and I'm still trying to do. My friends for being there every day at the hospital making me laugh. And definitely the cancer nurse specialists at the Royal Stoke, Louise and Catherine. I hope they don't mind me mentioning their names, which I'm sure they won't. They are absolutely wonderful humans. And my surgeon, Miss Albanese, without them, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Is there anything people didn't know has happened to you during this journey?
I went missing in hospital. So not long after I got the diagnosis, I was walking around the corridors of Children's A&E, and this healthcare lady came up to me and she said, "Are you okay? I think I could be lost because I was looking for a coffee shop." No one in the ward had realised that I'd was missing at this time because it was like quite late at night. And I was walking around the corridors of Children's A&E, which was a different, completely different area of the hospital. And the lady says, where are you from? What ward are you from? And I said, I've got something wrong with me head. She said, you're from my ward. Come on, let's go. And she still to this day, every time I have to go up to the ward for a follow-up or whatever, she'll say, "Oh, yes, she is. The wanderer returns."
Did you get the coffee?
No, I never got the coffee. She did make me one, though, after the traumatic experience of Children's A&E.
Oh, gosh. And all the 100 other people.
There was a lady opposite me, and I'm actually still in contact with her because she's been through a similar brain tumour, so hers is a lower grade, but she's still going through it, and I think they're all, whether they're cancer or not, you're going through a brain tumour diagnosis, aren't you? Mm-hmm. She'd had the operation and she'd got a swollen eye, and not long after my husband and my brother-in-law left from visiting me, she said, "Oh, are they your boys?" And I said, "No, they are my husband and my brother-in-law. They are not my children." I said, "It's a good job you've got a swollen eye, because if you didn't, I might have to give you one." But
to.
Yeah, that was another story that made me laugh. But, I must admit, talking about it now, my dad, he used to come to hospital every day with a joke for me. And it was quite nice, actually. I've done some awareness work with the Brain Tumour Charity. And when they came round to interview me, my dad was here. And she said, oh, tell your dad a joke what he's never heard before. And I said, oh, I'll struggle because he came to the hospital with a new one every day. So all my good jokes are my dad. But yeah, I think things like that keep you going, don't
they? Yeah, they do.
And I think it's so important as well to know that you aren't alone. There's a community of people going through the same thing as you. Your thoughts, feelings are valid. They're important and normal. And I think it's so important to accept help. I found this so hard at first, to accept family coming round and cleaning and doing bits and bobs for me. But accept that help, because they wouldn't offer if they couldn't do it or didn't want to do it. I think it's the most humane thing anybody can do is say that you're not alone.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much.
This is the Auntie Anne Brain Tumours Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie Anne Brain Tumours Talk Show on podcast.